it has really pushed me into encouraging other people and telling them, speaking the words that they need to hear, because I know that they were words that I wanted to hear. Like, you do have a story. It is unique. Yes, there are a million love stories out in the world, but who cares? I need another one, don't you? Like, I want to read it, and I haven't read yours yet, so please write it.
Hi, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, you get my conversations with peak-performing thought leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs. Every week, I bring you the latest scoop on what these incredible people do to succeed and how you can get their secrets and do it too. Whether we're talking about best practices for spending time creating, how to work the business part of your business, or how to keep in that innovative mindset so you can keep living and performing, you'll get practical and wise information to use in your work and in your life. And now, let's get on with the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. My name is Isolde Trachtenberg, and I am super excited that you're here. I'm also super thrilled with today's guest. I can't wait to tell you about her. We've been giggling for the last 15 minutes because we're having such a good time. She's fabulous. You're going to love her. Kat Caldwell believes that each person on earth has a story to tell. This passionate belief has catapulted her into creating interactive journals to help people start writing, which is awesome. She's become a creative coach to help people start their book and creating a podcast, Pencils and Lipstick, where creatives have a space to tell their story. I was just on it recently, and it is fabulous. You need to check it out. Kat is a storyteller in her own right, having written a historical novel called Stepping Across the Desert, and a magical realm novel, An Audience with the King. In between coaching clients and writing her next novel, you can find Kat traveling the world, studying another language. Oh, fabulous. I can't wait to talk about that. Reading a good book or volunteering at her local church with a cup of cold brew close by. Kat, I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I always love talking to you.
We've been giggling, and I'm all kerfuffled because we started this whole thing off by laughing outrageously about the weird photos that we take with our own iPhones. That selfies sometimes make you look like, oh no, I died last week and I didn't realize it. So okay, you do something that I absolutely love. You help other people get creative, and I sort of do the same thing from a different perspective. But I have so many questions. First, though, before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about who you are and what draws you to the creative aspect of yourself that you use most, which is writing. So what got you started writing? What got you started telling stories?
I can trace back writing to probably 7 years old. Honestly, once I started to read, that opened up like a whole world to me. I lived on a farm and I was asthmatic. And so there were several times a year that I was holed up in the house. My parents were not about to have to spend another week in the hospital. So every time there was haying or harvesting or anything going on, they made me stay inside, which was a little devastating because I liked being outside.
Sure.
But I found reading. And so I literally remember being in my closet reading and then one day just sort of deciding that I could write it better. And so
I love it.
I rewrote the ending to this novel. It was like a World War II really short novel about a nurse. And I was like, wow, I could write this better. So before fan fiction was a thing, I was rewriting my fan fiction.
I love it.
Yeah, I dabbled in poetry. I remember writing, poems for new babies coming along. And it's a shame I don't have them anymore. And I started journaling because there was a lot of sort of trauma going on in my family, although I had no idea what that meant at the time. I just knew there was lots of stuff happening and it made me feel crazy. So I started journaling when I was probably like 10. And I have a lot of those, not to say that I did it every day, but I writing has been a part of my life for almost my entire life.
That's incredible. And it's so fascinating to me that you were telling these stories and you know, that you improved on them for yourself. This would have been better, a better ending. What about that felt satisfying? Like, how did you decide, first of all, the courage to go, I know better as a 7-year-old? Is it? No, that's incredible. There's a part of you, I think, inside that goes, that I deserve this. I deserve to tell these stories. And I'm wondering if you have ever thought about where that courage to tell those stories comes from.
That's an interesting question. You know, as I watch my 7-year-old that I have right now, I think that you just have more courage as a child. Because there was a lot of trauma in my childhood, even at that point. But while it was going on and I knew it and it directly affected me, I look back at that little girl and I think somehow kids are able to like separate themselves alone and then like everything else when they're interacting with others. That's the only thing that I can really pinpoint, I guess. I just think that kids are a little bit stronger, honestly, than adults. I know just myself as an adult, having gone through different therapies and different ways to deal with my childhood, it seems like once we're an adult, it all just like smacks us in the face. And we're like, oh, look at that. I need to deal with some things in my past. Because I wasn't a particularly brave kid. Like, I wouldn't talk to anyone. I couldn't order my own ice cream. I hated, like, I was so shy. Even up into my 20s, like, if I didn't know how something worked, like the cafeteria, I wouldn't go inside. I didn't know how to do it. And I honestly think that, like, that shyness compounded the older I got. I think the more aware you become of people around you. And so I have a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and they're all girls. And so I'm watching this from the outside going, oh, okay. The 13-year-old has figured out other people seeing her and being more concerned about like what they think, even though, you know, most of the time we don't think about anybody when we're walking past them. They're like, oh, look at that kid. You know, we walk past. Like, but, you know, like suddenly becoming really self-aware. The 10-year-old has not yet fully gone into that. She can be real crazy and funny, and then she's self-aware of her parents.
Parents embarrass her. I see.
She can be doing the craziest thing, but the minute we step on the scene, she's like, hey, get out of here. And then the 7-year-old's like completely oblivious, like, this is the world. She'll play with her Legos in front of you and is able to shut out the world. And I could stare at her for 3 hours and it would take her that long to figure out that I was looking at her. So I think that's an awesome thing. It's a good, probably healthy thing for our brains as kids. And so I almost think it's a shame that we become aware of the world. I think we'd be happier if we could just play our Legos and not...
I still play Legos every chance I get, so I completely but yeah, absolutely. I think it's what you just said is so interesting, that there is this expanding awareness, not just of the world around you, but of how the world might view you.
Yeah.
And there's something that happens to a lot of us, I think, that is this, all of a sudden you become aware and you start feeling, whether or not anybody's judging you, you start feeling judged, you know?
Right.
And that's so fascinating that you've got this 7, 10, 13-year-old phase that you can be looking at and going, oh, I see where this happens. And yet there's still something that comes in, especially, you know, you put out 2 books and you're working on a third and you have a podcast and you reach out to other people. So there's something in you that went, well, even if I am shy, I'm going to do it anyway, right? So, do you have an idea how that happened? How did you go, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to write this book. I'm going to tell this story.
So when I was in college, I decided I was going to write, even though I didn't have a whole lot of encouragement to do it. And in a loving way, like my grandparents and my parents who were involved, they just wanted me to, you know, be successful and be able to pay for my rent, I think. So, and I understood that, like, it's weird. I have a really practical mind as well as a really like creative kind of haphazard mind. I kind of have both of these sort of fighting in my brain all day long. And I think some of that's like how you are, you know, I was born creative, but like the nurturing came along and made me practical. So I kind of, there was always my dream and I was determined to do it. And I'm somebody who, if you tell me I can't, I'm going to be like, oh, really?
Just watch me.
Just watch me, you know. But I won't declare it. I'll keep it quiet and I'll be like, ha ha ha. Someday I'll be able to point at you, you know, long after you've forgotten it. It'd be like, see, I did it. So there's that. I also tend to, I was reflecting in these first few days of 2021, I tend to just be like, okay, I'll do this, and then just do it and fall head forward and sometimes really like splatter out on the sidewalk and have no idea what I'm doing in free fall, but you know, at least I did it. Because right. If I overthink, I won't. I'll just freeze. Mm-hmm. But I do have to say, I did some therapy in my early 30s because I needed it. And I can really pinpoint that as what helped me as an adult sort of come back out of my shell. I seem to have gone into it at some point. Looking back, I think it was a bit of postpartum depression and then not really knowing what I was doing with my life while being responsible for all these babies and my husband working like 16-hour days. So, and I was overseas. I was away from my family. So I did notice, I was self-aware enough. And I think that comes from journaling a lot of like, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And I can't seem to pinpoint it, but something's wrong. I can't seem to write anymore. I can't seem to smile anymore. And when I came back to the States in 2015, I was like, I need help. So I do think that therapy really did help me to actually get through that, which since 2015, so I ended in 2016, 17-ish. The end of 2017 is when I really had the courage to publish my first book. And so in the last 3 years, I've seen a freedom in myself to really pursue what I've always wanted to pursue and a confidence to say it out loud. It's not that I wasn't writing before, you know, during all those years, but it just took me a little bit longer, I think, to have the confidence to say out loud, like, I'm a writer and this is what I do. Because I did always want to be quote unquote successful or, you know, show my grandparents and my parents that I could do these things, you know, whatever we put on ourselves, like I could make money, I could have a career, I could do this. And my life didn't really, it kind of wound around in a maze like pattern. And you know, it just takes some whirling pathways sometimes to get to where you're supposed to go. So I guess my confidence was always there. It got hidden for a while. And then it came back out and I'm still working on it, as I think all of us are.
Absolutely. And first of all, good for you for recognizing that there was something amiss, that you needed help, and for getting the help that you needed. There's such a stigma about taking care of your mental health, which it's always been strange to me that there's this stigma around that. If we take care of our physical health, taking care of our mental health should be just as important. So yay, good for you.
Yes.
When you talk about, it's so fascinating. I love it. I love talking about this stuff, and I'm so glad you're willing to go there. When you're talking about the fact that you had the confidence all along and it just got hidden, is it fair to say that, no, let me ask it a different way, I guess. When you weren't feeling outwardly confident or outwardly expressive of your confidence in your gifts, what were you telling yourself on the inside, and how did you behave on the outside?
Yeah, I didn't think I was good enough. And I didn't appreciate creativity as something to brag about, you know, and brag about in a good way. Like, I'm a creative person and I have a creative business. I didn't know that that was a thing. So I've always done like hands-on creativity. So sewing or scrapbooking, I got really into because I just loved finding things, you know, making little scrapbook journals, you know, where you just sort of get multimedia things and glue them together, weld them together, or whatever you want. Like, you know, from high school on, you can find notebooks where I'm just like pasting and putting all these things on things to make it look better, in my humble opinion. But no one ever really saw that as anything to commend. You know, I don't ever remember getting any comments on it. Not that I found that weird. I just, looking back, and to be, not to sort of be on my European family or my European friends, but we lived in Spain. My husband's Spanish. We lived there for 6 years, and then France for another five. And society there doesn't really value creativity in a sense of like, well, in any sense of like business or something that you should really spend a lot of time doing. Not, maybe it's not as different here. I think right now I'm surrounded by a lot of people who appreciate creativity. So I remember getting comments of like, well, I wish I had time to scrapbook, while I'm thinking I'm doing it at like 2 a.m.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom, which is something that not a lot of women do in Europe. And I was, because my firstborn, I quit because she was having a lot of trouble. And then we moved and I didn't speak the language. And I would just get a lot of comments. Well, if I could stay home too, I guess I would be creative. You know, I guess maybe I would do something. So I don't really fault my friends or my family saying that, because I think it's something that we tend to, you know, sort of make comments on. But because of it, I didn't really appreciate it, you know, that I could do anything with it. I just sort of saw it as, you know, something I guess the stay-at-home mom does, and that's it. And I guess that really kind of added to me not really talking much about writing to other people, because I guess I wasn't really sure how they would respond. Anytime I did, I had a lot of people being like, well, you know how hard it is. Well, I mean, you know, have you even tried to get published? Well, you know, well, how are you even going to do this? Instead of encouraging. But I have to say, probably because of therapy, I'm able to look back and think, okay, I'm just going to learn from that and choose better words with my kids and choose better words with other people. And because of it too, it has really pushed me into encouraging other people and telling them, speaking the words that they need to hear, because I know that they were words that I wanted to hear. Like, you do have a story. It is unique. Yes, there are a million love stories out in the world, but who cares? Like, I need another one. Don't you? Like,
absolutely.
I want to read it, you know, and I haven't read yours yet. So please write it. Those are the words that I wish had been said. But since they weren't, I can say them to other people. So, you know, I've really come to the conclusion that I can learn from everything that happened in the past, good or bad, and I can choose to not be bitter about it. This is therapy speaking again. And you know, sort of weaponize it for the good.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And I keep saying that with you. You're fascinating. I love it. you know, what's something that you said struck me. You said, I can say it to other people. And then the thing that struck me as you said that was, but you also say it to yourself.
True.
You know, you
True.
Also every day as a creative person, you say those words to yourself. This is something I deserve to do, whatever it is, whatever creative outlet
right.
you get. And you went through for a time, it sounds like you were living in a culture that wasn't demonstrably appreciative of it. And then you came back to the USA and, you know, pulled yourself up by your britches, as they say. And then you wrote the books, and you've had two published and a third on the way since 2017. Or were
right.
these books ones that you sort of were noodling around before that, but weren't working on while you were living abroad?
That's an interesting question. So my the one that I'm bringing out this year in 2021 called Coffee Stains, it's one that I actually wrote in 2009, and I've taken it and completely rewritten it. That one I wrote while pregnant and at home all day long. but I still liked the story, and I, you know, just needed to be modernized and just from the point of view of a more mature writer, I think. Mm-hmm. My first one, Stepping Across the Desert, is a historical novel. And that was the one that I remember sitting in my dining room in France. And I had been reading about the Barbary pirates because I'm a history freak. And I can go down the rabbit hole better than anyone else when my kids are sleeping and spend 3 hours, you know, reading about Barbary pirates.
Sure.
Why wouldn't you? And thinking, well, oh my goodness, I need to write a story about this. And that was kind of when I had already decided that something was a bit wrong. And my own self-diagnosis was that I wasn't getting what I needed. It was a very self-centered diagnosis. So my husband has always worked really long hours. He's in finance. And so it's like every quarter you have to, you know, finish up the books, and it quarters come really quickly.
There's
just always work to be done. So he had really long days. So once the kids were in bed, I had the time to write. And I guess my self-centered diagnosis was, well, it's my turn now. And so I'm going to write this. And I actually put my foot down with my husband. I was like, well, you're going to stay with the kids and I'm going to do this. You know, that's not always the best way to put it to spouses. But I wish I had known you at that time. You would have helped me get to his no as we spoke last time. But my husband does love me. And so he allowed this to take place. So I did start then in France in 2015. So we came probably the end of 2014, 2015. Of course, we moved across the ocean. And that was the book that I really got the determination, I guess, to find an editor and find help with it. And part of the confidence problem with writers is that you have to spend quite a bit of money to get your product. Excuse me. So you need to pay the editor and you need to buy a book cover. And when you don't have the confidence that your work is any good, it's hard to spend that money.
It's hard to justify it. Sure.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that took some months because I was just within myself. I got some really harsh but very good advice from one editor who said, you need to cut this in half.
Mm.
And at first I was very upset by him because I really like long books. I love epic books. I love just getting involved with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody does. And she was correct. I was putting in too much detail. I had been reading too many classics. And especially French classics, they are all about some description that nobody wants that anymore. And so I probably cut 100,000 words from that
book. Wow.
Which it needed. It's still 120,000 or so, you know. So you're talking like, gosh, that's a lot.
Epic novel. Wow.
Yeah. And really it was, you know, it wasn't needed, I guess. I liked that, you know, all of it, of course. But
kill your darlings, I know.
Yes. But it was good advice, but that took time, you know. It took time getting over that and through it and processing it and then saying, okay, this person obviously knows what they're talking about, better do it. And, you know, when you're cutting words, like whole scenes, it no longer flows. So you have to redo it. So that did take some time. But I'm glad for the advice. I'm glad that I spent the money. I would not have learned otherwise. And I guess in that same process, I was really, my mind was being open to like, you don't have to do this alone and you don't have to know everything. I always assumed painters and writers, you know, got the credit for their work because they did it all. And that was kind of the wrong way to think of it, really. No, they've always had an editor. They've always had, you know, painters have always sort of banded together and gotten critiques and criticism and learned. I assumed that if I was a writer, I shouldn't need to seek help with it. I don't know where that came from. This is me looking back on myself, you know. So yeah, that one I started a while, you know, before I moved to the States, and it was in the States that I really was processing and learning that I didn't have to do it alone, which is good. And then An Audience with the King is my first fantasy, and that just sort of came to me, and I just sat down actually while I was trying to rewrite Coffee Stain, so one that will come out this year. An Audience with the King wouldn't go away. And it started out as a short story to be able to have something to send to my newsletter, because of course we have to have newsletters, and I was struggling at the time with that. And then it just kept coming. And yeah, that one was done within maybe 4 months, sent off to an editor who I adore. I would give you her name, but then you guys will inundate her inbox and not leave her. I'm just kidding. It's Emma's Edits, and she's over in England, and she's wonderful. And so that was done within less than a year's time. And I was really proud of it. I am really proud of it. And it just sort of was like a culmination of, look, you've come a long way. You've done a lot of hard work, and it has paid off. So that was fun. That was fun to get done. And it was fun to write because I wasn't restricted by the natural realm, you know. So it has magic in it. Emotions are in the air. You can, you know, Nelia can see them. She can see words if they're being spoken truthfully. They come out and she can physically see them. And she can see sort of evil as tar surrounding and kind of choking humans, even though they, you know, in the physical realm, they don't know it. Right. And it was kind of like a fun way to play on what happens to us with all of our different emotions. And she is one that takes a journey through these different places to get home. And it's not only a journey through all these weird sort of towns that she's never gone through because she's poor and never considered herself worthy enough to travel, but she goes on her own journey within herself as she's doing it. So kind of a play on the epic adventure with a female character, not a male character.
Nice.
She is the heroine. So yeah, you know, they all have come from different sort of spaces. I'm still excited about this one coming out because it's a redone. And I think that that's a cool story too, to like go into your files and take out that story or that book you started a long time ago and see if it's worth dusting off and redoing. So.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. When the novel I'm working on right now, I just saw, you know, I don't know if you do this, but I go back through my memories of Facebook every night, Facebook posts. And in 2010, 2011, I did this project where I wrote a micro story every single day. I had a minute to write it. So I got a prompt word and then I timed myself and I had a minute to write this story. And back in 2011, I wrote a story where the main character's name was Cassie. She was some sort of psychic. She worked with the police, and she got called by the cops to go to the Walsh Building at Georgetown University to go look at a crime scene. That was part of the part of the story that I wrote. And this was 2011, and I had not seen this in years, this particular little entry on Facebook. And my current book, the main character's name is Cassie. She's a professional tarot reader who works with the police to solve crimes. And one of the crime scenes she has to go to is in the Walsh Building at Georgetown University. So that had been sitting there for so long, for 9 years. And I'm writing the novel right now. And I wrote that part a couple weeks ago. So it's fascinating how going back, in my case, subconsciously, to finding some of these gems can really inform. But I love what you said about now you're a more mature writer. And when you say that, what do you mean? What do you mean now that I'm a more mature writer? What does that mean to you? How do you become a more mature writer?
For me, it was realizing, A, that I didn't have to do it myself. Mm-hmm. And that took even just, you know, that embeds itself probably starting off with not a lot of confidence, but then it becomes like a source of pride, I think. Mm. And realizing I took a couple writing courses in the university years, several years that I took to get my degree. And I wasn't, I guess, super impressed with them. I had kind of a chip on my shoulder because I was writing a novel at the time. And so I just sort of thought that I knew more than everyone else around me. I had higher aspirations, you know. So I think it became a bit of a chip on my shoulder between not having the confidence to walk in to a writing class and be able to take the criticism, because that's in my head. But my outward expression of it was kind of like, oh, well, I don't need that. Like, I'm a writer. This is not my hobby. This is what I want to do. So breaking down that pride and I guess just as I grew older, reading different genres, being able to do exercises in which I'm sort of crossing over into a different writing style or writing genre, being fascinated and allowing myself to learn and be fascinated by other writers, even if their books aren't particularly my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Just being open to learning from them. I don't know if this happened to you as we grew up in the 80s and 90s of like, you know, whatever music people were listening to, like if you didn't listen to that, like your music was dumb. Oh my gosh. Like, why would you even bother? Like, I can't believe that you listened to that. Oh, it was this weird attitude. Uh-huh. Maybe it's more Midwest, but we seem to have like this lack of confidence of being like, who cares?
Right. This is what I like. And yeah. It's, where did you grow up in the Midwest?
In Wisconsin.
Okay. I think we talked about this last time. I'm from Michigan, or I grew up in Michigan. So yeah, I remember that, if you don't like this, then there's something wrong with you kind of attitude.
Cool. Yeah. And so you get into that group. Like for me, it was punk because my older brother was into punk, you know? And so like, I can't believe you listen to pop music. And like, oh my gosh. Now I, of course I know all the Britney Spears lyrics, but you know, I would attribute that to the radio having.
Right. Sure. Because the radio did not play punk unless it was a very specific kind of station.
Not at all. And yet I spent my summers with my grandparents and all we got there was classical music and I liked it. I loved it. I loved listening to it and spending those moments with my grandfather in complete silence between the two of us as we're listening to this song, you know, on PBS radio or NPR, I guess it is. But never being able to admit that to other people. Like, oh my God, I don't listen to classical. What are you talking about?
I can't tell people I like Schubert. That would be weird.
I don't even know their names. And instead of embracing it and, you know, going forward and listening, looking back, it seems to have really embedded itself into me, that attitude. And so when my father-in-law, who really liked opera, would put it on, and his sons, of course, would complain, "Oh, Dad." And that just sort of reinforced my idea of like, oh, well, I shouldn't, you know, that's lame. And I guess that just sort of infiltrated everything for books and all that. But as I sort of became a mom and was alone a lot in a foreign country, and I just couldn't deny the fact that I was fascinated by the museums around me. I was fascinated by other books. I grew up with people being like, romance novels are terrible. Terrible, I say. You
know? Really?
They're like porn. So of course I had to read one at one point. And then I was like, well, actually, I mean, just like anything, some of them are like, meh, all right. And some of them, man, those writers, they really do their research.
Yeah.
Like, they have some amazing ideas and they know their history. So I think that's kind of when I was like, hey, maybe some of the things people told me when I was a kid were wrong.
I'm going to do it a different way.
We all got to get to that point, you know, when we realize, those adults didn't know what they were doing or saying.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because they're a product of their own inside workings, whatever those are. And I think that's part of maturity for me anyway, is recognizing that we're all the hero of our own story, you know? So, so what works for me might not work for you. It might not have worked for the adults in your life when you were a kid, but hey, you know, this is you now today, and you have the confidence to step out of that. I love what you said about romance writers and the research they do and everything. There are so many books like that form us or forge us when we're young. The books that really we recognize that someone took a lot of care with, you know. And do you have any like that? Do you have any books that you're just like, this book for me was life altering because of the history or because of the research or because of the writing, whatever it was? I'd love it if you have one that you're like, or two that you're just in love with. I'd love to know what those are.
I was really in love with, I know it sounds cliche, but Jane Austen when I was a teenager, and Little Women. And I think a lot of it was because without really knowing, you know, what I know now, like being 16 and kind of knowing about women's suffrage and like women haven't always had it easy, but I had other things to worry about. I think it just, the idea that she had the courage to write and to write directly from female point of view. And now when I reread them, I'm like, man, she's really poking at society here, you know, where it can go over your head if you're 16 and have other things to worry about and just trying to be very literary, you know, or, you know, if you're a man and you don't want to see it. But she got her message across in a endearing way, like that has survived the ages, you know. I really liked Catch 22 because it was one of the first books that was written in such a strange way. It's not very linear. You really have to go back and reread passages and be like, what is he talking about? It's very it's very mental. So like how you think is how he wrote, and that to me was just eye-opening, that I didn't have to write exactly how the eye saw it, but how the mind was seeing it or feeling it or experiencing it. It's a very strange, now that I say it, I should go back and read it. I just remember just being like, oh my gosh, this is so different. And then The Poisonwood Bible.
Barbara Kingsolver.
I just adore that book because it is an amazing feat by an author to be able to keep five different voices, always different, always within character, of all different ages, was mind-blowing. I learned so much just reading that book. and seeing how much more my writing needed to develop. Mm-hmm. And so all of those, I see those as kind of like stepping stones in my life. Of course, I've read lots of other books. Like, one of the problems I have is that I read books in different languages. And so I have to remember, there is one romance novel that blew me away. Gosh, I wish I could remember. I'll try to, in English, I'm not sure what it was, but it's a long book. It's like The Winds of, it's on the tip of my brain.
In what language did you read it?
Spanish.
Oh, well, what is the Spanish title?
Oh, you're going to ask me things then.
Well, I sort of speak Spanish, so I thought maybe I'll help you translate, but that's okay.
My library is downstairs. I'll try to find it. That one was amazing because she knew Paradise Lost, like backwards and forwards. And if you know Paradise Lost, it's like 500 pages.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, depending on what size book you get. But I thought, oh my gosh, why don't I ever bring into my characters things that I'm passionate about like that? Like weird things, because I know some, like we were talking about trivia before, there's some weird trivia I know.
Like, really? What's a weird trivia thing that you know?
So when I was young, I read this probably 1,000 page book about Hanoi Hilton. So I know one of the torture techniques in Vietnam was to bind your arms backwards with bamboo until your elbows touched.
Hmm.
It's dark.
Yes.
But I read things like that. You know, Cervantes was captured by the Burberry pirates, but he was bought back because the Catholic Church actually believed in buying back people who were taken. The Anglican Church in England did not. And so they just left their people to rot.
Wow.
Yeah.
They didn't negotiate with terrorists, I guess.
They did not negotiate. Who cares about those peasants?
Right.
Leave them. We have too many people. We're overpopulated.
Oh, my goodness. I wonder if, you know, whoever the king was, King George, if that was the... if that was
he's
the...
just too crazy. He's like, I don't know what's going on.
I can imagine. Let them rot. Yeah. Oh, boy. I apologize to any people who are royalists. That was bad, but I'm not that sorry. So there you go.
No, no. I mean, they're like the politicians of today, you know?
Right.
You know how the Mesopotamians, their king used to have to come out every year and declare all the things he did wrong and like flog himself in public for them. And I think that we should bring that back.
I think that's a great idea. Although they have to actually admit that they've done something wrong.
Well, yeah.
And I think that might be the... That might be the fly in the ointment, as they say. So okay. So you've written three books. You're about to put the third one out, or the third one is about to come out sometime very soon. And you said something about this process that I'm very fascinated about. You said that you allowed yourself to gather a team of people who helps you do this, that you didn't have to do this alone.
Right.
How did you do that? How did you, like, for any writer who, A, wants coaching, contact Kat Caldwell, just letting you know. but if there's a writer out there and they're going, well, I don't even know how to begin to find an editor, how to begin to look for someone who could make a cover for me, what goes into gathering your team and how did you do it?
I first looked at people I knew. So for my first cover, my brother did it. And I love the cover. But then he got really busy, so I couldn't use him for my second cover.
Is he an artist or a graphic designer?
So his wife is a muralist, and he's a photographer. And then he does, he knows all the Adobes like you wouldn't believe. Photoshop and all this stuff. And so the two of them form the artist couple, LLC. You can find them on social media.
I love it.
They put together this beautiful cover for it. Because it takes place between Algeria and London, they made it look like sand, sort of etched in sand are footsteps, because it's called Stepping Across the Desert. She has a journey. And then etched in sand is the London tower, the Tower of London. So I just thought it was really unique and beautiful. But they got quite busy, which is great in their artist company. So I actually went to Fiverr for my second one, and it took 4 different people to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to every step of the way give myself permission to spend the money, and just see it as a learning process. Mm. So what I learned is it is worth sitting back quietly, or maybe with some classical music or opera, you know?
Yes.
And really thinking about what you want that cover to look like and dreaming about it and what would attract you. And then it's worth realizing that what you want might not be what people want. So I'm looking at my old cover right now. I actually printed it with one cover that I loved. I found a picture of a castle and sent it off to be sort of manipulated and got permission from the photographer. And I loved it. And it did not generate any clicks. People were like, meh. So I had to redo it. So that was a learning process. I think part of it is just learning. I'd allowed myself to be part of writing groups and ask questions. So because I was always so shy, one thing that got me out of my shyness, honestly, is living in a different country with children.
Mm.
And you know, I can go all day without eating if I'm too shy to go ask, but your kid cannot.
Right.
Your kid's going to have a temper tantrum and you're going to be, you know, on that street in Madrid being like, what do I do? Or, you know, sometimes you just got to get home and you got to ask, you know, where to catch the bus or figure out how to get on the bus because you're not sure. So I found that having sort of an excuse to ask the questions helped me sort of get out of my debilitating shyness. And some of that, I like social media because it allowed me to, even with shaking hands, ask questions. And I, because of therapy, I was asked by my therapist very nicely, but you know, prompted to go out and do it anyway. And
right.
The more I did it, the less scary it would be. And that is really, really true. The more you do it, the less scary it is. But you got to do it. And so because I wanted it so badly, I wanted my book published, I forced myself to do it. And I have done some stupid things and learned along the way.
Join the club. We have cookies. Yes.
Yes. Kind of like you forgot a chapter in your book. maybe you need to go back and get that. So I encourage people. I still struggle with doing a lot on my own. For this third book, I am going to outsource it as much as possible because it takes the pressure off of not doing it right and sort of being shown, hey, you didn't do it right here. Your chapter's missing, and having to go back and do it. And that costs you money.
Right.
So, you know, if they want to contact me, I can help them, but there's tons of writing groups on Facebook where you can just ask questions and don't, you might feel silly. I can't tell you not to feel silly because I felt silly. But the truth is, those of us who have published or have learned, we're so eager to help you not make the mistakes we did.
Absolutely.
Like, we really want to help you not forget a chapter, you know, or realize that documents, you know, Word documents do not translate into PDFs very well. You will have a terribly formatted book if you do that. Please don't do that. You know, like all these little tips that I was either too shy to ask or didn't think to ask. Just ask them. A lot of us, like, no one's judging you. It might feel like they are just because of what we talked about earlier, but ask the questions. If someone is a jerk, I don't know why, but 2020 happened. So, you know, just put that person in the corner and be like, something's wrong with them. You know, 99% of the people are going to be like, I'll help you. I'll, you know, you should do this, you should do that. And Instagram's a great place to ask. A lot of people tend to be nicer there. if you've had bad luck with Facebook. But most writing groups, like, there are rules. You know, you have to be nice. You'll get kicked off if you're not nice. So just ask. We'll help you.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. We don't know that the question is there unless we hear the question. So
right. That's yeah, your question might help us too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I find that I learn a lot when I teach others. So that's it's very helpful to me. I know your coach, and you've said something that I think is fascinating. Again, because I'm fascinated by you. I'm so sorry that I, you know, in this instance, I'm sorry I left DC because I'd love to meet you for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, no kidding. Come back.
I know. Well, I'll be back and visit. I promise. So you've said that we're all creative, and I feel the same way, that we all have a sort of a creative genius inside us. But I'd love to get your take on what that means. How is being creative our birthright? How were we born to be creative? And more importantly, how do you help your clients, your coaching clients, see that?
I think it's, starting with the second question, I think it's telling them over and over again, just like we tell ourselves over and over again. But I think if we just look back in history, our ancestors were creative all day long. And I think that we don't appreciate it as something creative. It's just like I was in my, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, walking around Europe with people telling me, you know, oh, you and your little scrapbooking thing, you know, or whatever. That's creativity. Decorating is creativity. Making clothes is creativity. Cooking well, you know, actually taking the time to like understand how food goes together. That's creativity, mm-hmm. you know. Creating different wines, that's creativity. Growing things is creativity. Like, you have to learn, you know. I think that our ancestors actually were diligent about learning how things were done in the world, how the world worked. We have things so easy now. I really do think television killed a lot of our creativity. Not that you can't creatively make television or write or, you know, all of that is creative. But I think that the average American watching 6 to 8 hours of television a day is what killed a lot of our creativity because it just, for me, it numbed my brain. It was one thing that I actually had to quit. Cold turkey. I just stopped watching because it wasn't doing anything for me. Not that everyone has to. Maybe you have more self-discipline than I had. But, you know, sort of having it on in the background sort of thing. I grew up like that. It's just on in the background. But it's just like noise that was impeding my thinking. So maybe that's just me. But I just step back and look around me and look at myself even and think, you know, we want everything fast. And that means that we don't take the time to understand how things work. You know, why does a flower come out of the ground? Or like, why did my tomatoes plants grow but not flower? What did I do?
Like, what could I have done differently?
How did this happen?
Right.
You know, and asking those questions and just being curious about the world. And I think that if we would dare to sit in silence a little bit more, we would see our creativity coming out. I think that we're scared of silence in general as a society. But I also think like looking at what you do that helps you, whatever you gravitate towards, whether it's woodworking, whether it's gardening, whether it's sewing, the thing that you kind of wish you had time to do more of, or, you know, that you did when you were younger and now you don't create the time and the space to do it, that's your creativity and it's worth doing. And I think that regardless of what people around you say, that is your mental health moment and you deserve to do it. And if no one else around you is doing it, then maybe look back and see how great their mental health is or how great they feel about their lives and just think like, well, all right, maybe you don't like your life, but I'm going to like my life because I'm going to do my creativity. You know, I'm going to do what I feel best doing. And I think we deserve to do that. And I think that you'll feel better and better and better. And And then you can encourage others to do it. And I think the world would be a much brighter place and a much healthier place mentally and physically if we were to do and create some time to do what we kind of, you know, you like feel pulled towards, but you keep denying yourself the time to do it.
Oh, I love it. Preaching to the choir. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I love what you said about the fact that we deserve to do it. And it struck me. I love that you went cold turkey. I grew up with the TV also and have had to really step away unless it's something incredibly special. Like I watched The Queen's Gambit and loved it.
So good.
It was so good. You know, but unless it's something really special like that, I've stepped away. And when television went digital, I don't know how many years ago now, we didn't upgrade, so we don't have television, right? We just went, because I know myself, and I'm like I think you said you were, I will watch it if it's there. So I don't. And yet, this notion of deserving it, of allowing yourself to think that you deserve it, is so important. And I feel like that should be something we see first thing in the morning, like put a poster up or something. I deserve to be creative. But there's right. this notion that you mentioned about social media and watching television and everything. I think that there is there's a big difference between being a content creator and a content consumer, and watching TV versus being a writer for TV. Mm. One is a content consumer and the other is a content creator. So that part of it really makes sense to me. The part that someone who's struggling to spend time doing the things that they're doing, you know, I have to put bread on the table and pay the bills and da 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 da. How do we, and more importantly, how do you, as a writer and as a coach and as a mom of three kids and a wife and somebody who's managing a home and all of that, how do you prioritize creativity in your day? What do you do to make that happen?
So as we're talking about TV, like, it's always been it sort of makes me cringe when people are like, oh, I just want to veg out and watch TV, because again, like, that's how I was. And I do know people who are able to really enjoy watching TV and then move on to the next thing. I guess my mental state, like, just becomes lethargic, mm-hmm. Probably because of how I grew up, or who knows. But I have had to turn that around in my thinking. I think it's like 8 years ago now that I like you, have no more local channels. Don't know what those are. No, my husband, when he actually wants to watch football, is like, how do I do this? Like, how do we get this? So instead of being like, well, you know, kind of, I deserve a break. My break is television. That's how I grew up thinking. Mm-hmm. I changed it to like, I deserve to sit down and cut out paper or write a story, because that actually is what I truly want to do. And I think that takes some time to like rewire your thinking, mm-hmm. because at first your brain's like, that's work. Like, no, you don't want to do that. And so honestly, like, I used to scrapbook while watching TV, because it wasn't even I don't know. I'm like, oh, this is the time that I can watch the shows I want to watch. Mm. And so I can actually remember the television show I was watching when I see a certain page of scrapbooking.
That's how
my brain works. And so as I noticed that, I was like, you know what? What if I had been doing something more constructive? What could I remember from seeing this scrapbook page if I had been doing something more constructive? Mm-hmm. And so I moved into listening to books, and then I moved into, what if I allowed myself to listen to other genres of music to see what I like? And there are some genres I really don't like, and that's mm-hmm. okay, you know, but I didn't want to not like them because, you know, some 15-year-old when I was 15 told me I couldn't. And so now when I look at certain things that I'm working on, I'm like, oh yeah, that's when I was listening to that. I really don't like that genre. Or that's when I was listening to this book. And so it's kind of step by step. And in the last year, 2020, I tried to be more in silence. And that's kind of my goal 2021 as I go into it, is a little more silence. So it took me some baby steps. I think somebody who it does feel like they're in the whirlwind of life to take a moment. And this is just really good for your brain. We were talking before, I'm doing like brain detoxes this year, because I want to get my memory better and I want my brain to work better. It's just really good to take 5 minutes of silence. And your family's going to find that really weird and intrusive, because mom sitting down or dad sitting down for 5 minutes is like, what? I need to go interrupt her right now. She must be bored. So you might have to like hold yourself up in a closet.
Absolutely.
Or in your car.
And remind yourself that you deserve that 5 minutes, you know,
yes.
That's
and
so
then
important.
It's good for you.
Yeah.
But one thing I wanted to say is it's not only good for you, it's good for the people you love. And that's what I have learned more and more as I got therapy. And as I pursued what I love, my attitude is better. My love towards other people has grown. I think because I'm able to do what I love, and I'm able to grow my confidence and my love for myself. I think we all struggle with, you know, loving ourselves and how, if we're worth doing. It's like, how can you tell your daughters, I have only daughters, so that it's worth them pursuing if I don't do it? And that's a question that constantly comes back to me, especially as women. How can we tell girls that it's worth doing if we don't do it? You know, if you really enjoy taking a bath, and you tell your daughter all the time, well, you deserve to take a bath, but you never do. She's intaking what you don't do as much as what you say. And so I see it even, and I tell my girls outright, like, this is my job. I see writing as my job because I see it as something that improves the world, improves somebody's life. You know, when they read it, they had an enjoyable moment reading, you know, 200 pages, I hope. but, you know, like, I deserve to have some quiet to sit down and write this. And you, I deserve for you to be respectful of it. And, you know, just saying those words, like, because I'm respectful of you and what you like to do and your dance or your guitar or whatever, and just having those open conversations. So maybe taking a few minutes, if you feel like you don't have time to do it, and think, what are my actions showing my kids or the people around me? And how can I sort of change that? And maybe I can take 5 minutes to think of what used to really get me happy. Was it woodworking? Was it sewing? Was it drawing? Can I take 5 minutes to like get back into that? And maybe, you know, if it's something big like woodworking, maybe it's just like watching a 5 minute video, like to relearn it. Or, you know, picking up your whittling knife and being like, I kind of remember how to do this. What if I just, you know, strip the bark? You know, looking back at the creations you've made through your sewing or whatever, and just think, how did I feel? You know, I'm a big journaler. So like, how did it make me feel? I felt, you know, were you accomplished? Did you feel better about yourself? How was your attitude afterwards? I'm really enjoying that my attitudes towards the people that I love has improved the more that I pursue what I really think that I'm supposed to pursue. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And it's so funny. I just, January 1st, released a big 2021 calendar called the Mindful Creative, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's about taking that 5 minutes. It's about developing sort of in tandem a mindfulness practice and a creativity practice throughout the year. So, it's out there totally free. I'm just like, here, have it. My gift to the world. but the thing that is so interesting to me about what you said about how your relationships have improved, that it's almost like you see that in hindsight, like, oh, I can go back and see that. So when someone is just first starting out, like you have a new writing client and you say to them, your relationships with the people you love will improve when you do this, you know, let's say you do. How do you make that believable to them? Because I imagine people go, yeah, right.
I probably would have said that too. I just like telling my story, you know, sharing, like, how do I feel now compared to 15 years ago when I just wanted my, I just want my book out there. I really want a book out on the bookshelves. That's what I really want. You know, I've been there and gone from like just wanting it and not thinking that I can, not being able to sit down and write it, not having that story yet, you know, having rejections. I do have one book that was rejected and rejected and rejected. And it was published in 2003 through sort of, it wasn't a vanity press because I knew what those were and I avoided them, but it was like those. So I guess it was kind of like a self-publishing press now. So I didn't pay them. I knew not to pay anybody, but they didn't do any work. So basically they made money off of you being super excited and, you know, they didn't edit it. They didn't format it. They didn't do anything.
My goodness.
And even I was so proud of that. It was such a devastating experience. Of course they kept the rights for 7 years, you know,
yikes.
They knew about how to do that. But that book probably is best not published, let's just say. It was a good learning experience. I think I've lost my train of thought, but okay, so I've gone through like desiring to do it, and just think of like, if you feel better about yourself, then of course your attitude towards other people is going to be better. You know, I mean, I think that a lot of us feel like life is wanting a bit, it's lacking something. And the easiest thing to do is to blame others, as I did, blame my childhood and what happened growing up in an abusive alcoholic home, without my real father. You know, like, we can always go back and blame that, and with certain amount of truthfulness to it, like, yeah, it definitely shaped you, it definitely influenced you, but just think of like, okay, that is the reality, this is what it is, this is what life has handed me. I have to work 12 hours a day, you know, or maybe somebody's lost their job, or I have all these kids, or they're on virtual school, and virtual school sucks. It really does, especially if you're working or you just need 5 minutes. But just think like, okay, I want to be happy and I want to have a better attitude towards the people. And I think we, you know, maybe we could all have better attitudes. I know there are some really like naturally peppy, happy people out there, so maybe they don't, but I'm a rather like inward thinking, can become very like, my thoughts can really come out as emotions, my stress. I mean, we're a half Spanish household, like stress levels in our house with girls is like high drama all the time. And of course I want to constantly be a little bit better at how I react. And so I would just say, start by like journaling. I mean, I know some people really don't like that idea, but if you really, really desire some sort of change in your life, or really want to like have a little more productivity or something, even if it's not towards a business, like just growing a garden, like that's one of my goals this year. I laugh because I know nothing. I'm trying to gather information, you know, but whatever you used to like doing, did you used to like drawing? You know, why? What did you do as a kid? Taking 5 minutes to write it down and ask yourself a question. What used to make you happy? What used to make you feel release of stress? How, if you could have that, how would that impact? Maybe not your whole day, because heck, life happens. But how would it impact the half an hour afterwards? You know, So I know even the other day, right, virtual school gets up. And of course, we don't have the code and somebody doesn't have their book and somebody, and in the middle of it, I get this email of like, your links aren't working in your newsletter. Just like, why did I not double check the links? You know?
Right.
And yet I had taken a moment to myself and I had to just pat myself on the back, because in that half an hour, in all these things happening that I'm typically, my typical response is, oh my gosh, give me a minute. Here it is. I'm looking for it now. Everyone be quiet. like that sort of like mom voice of everyone's like, blah, 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 which my kids usually feed off of, you know, and it just gets, it can get bad. And sometimes, you know, we're working towards it being like, okay, everyone breathe. We got it. But because I had taken a moment to like journal, and taking those 5 minutes to think, you know, we got it all done. Everyone was happy. There were no tears shed, even with three girls. And it was like, hey, it works.
We did it.
We did it. Not to say that, you know, the dog didn't run away that afternoon and we weren't all like, if that damn dog doesn't get back here. So yeah, it's not a miracle. But I just really think I would encourage anyone, just let the thought linger, as turn off the radio while you're driving or the podcast. I'm really bad at constantly listening to podcasts, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you know, like one way, go in silence and just think, what did I used to do that was really great and made me feel really good? And how could I do that again once this week? And see what it was and see how it makes you feel. And then when you do it, be like, yeah, that was awesome. That was productive. Like, it doesn't mean that you're going to sell a book or whatever, but like, if it helped you, it probably helped your kids, or they saw you do it and they're like, look, mom's happy making, you know, painting ceramics. Who knew? Like, maybe they'll be like, yeah, mom needs to go paint her ceramics.
That's right. Mom, you look stressed. Go paint.
Go paint. Wouldn't that be lovely if they told us to go?
Ah, that'd be great.
I would love it. And, you know, again, realizing the example you set for self-care and self-happiness. And I know all of us are usually like, you don't need to play more video games. You know, I'm trying to be like, you don't need to play more video games. How about you and I go try to learn to sketch? And a lot of times, to be honest, my kids are like, no. I'm going to go play Legos. I'm like, fine, whatever, you know, but sometimes they come. But it still gives me that 5 minutes to learn to sketch.
Sure. You know? Absolutely. I mean, none of this happens in a vacuum, and none of it happens without you doing something about it. Right. So the fact that you're making it a priority is amazing. And there's another, I know I could actually keep you here for the next 6 hours and we could just keep chatting. And I know you have daughters to get back to and a life to get back to and writing to get back to. But I have just a couple more questions, sure. If that's okay. So no. So you do this with your kids, and you also, I know you have a mastermind. And how much of that it's called the Creative Writing Community, which I think is a great name for a mastermind. How do you do that in the mastermind? Well, actually, let me back up a little bit. I'd love to find out, what is a mastermind? How would someone join one? And how do you help the people in the mastermind to do that, to take the time to prioritize creativity and writing in their lives?
Well, you don't know that you were supposed to ask that question, but it's a great question.
I don't know. Okay.
So the mastermind is something I've been fiddling with since last fall.
Uh-huh.
And I am going full force into it this year in February. So the idea of the mastermind, and I kind of dabbled a bit, you know, everyone has their thing on Facebook, but I am probably moving it to ThinkSpot, which is like, you know, all these new social medias are coming up, but it's just like a quieter place and my first thing with the mastermind, as writers and as creatives, there's so many questions, especially if you want to do your writing for at least a side income, if not your full income. It's a lot. It can become a lot because it's not just publishing your book. It's you have to create a publishing company. You need to buy your ISBNs. You need to set up your website. You need to have a newsletter. You need to have a book launch. In order to have a book launch, you have to have beta readers, and you can go on and on. And I remember being like, what? What am I doing? I mean, with my first book, I did it absolutely wrong. I had a, you know, newsletter list of like 70 people, and I had no beta readers. I just, you know, went off of two different editors, and the book is fine, but there was no book launch. I didn't know what that was, and mm-hmm. I had no confidence to do it anyway. And it was like, who am I going to bring to my book launch? I don't know. Too many questions, too much overwhelm. So my idea was to get people together and have a community in which you can really lean on each other. And so if you have a book that you're writing, you can get advice from people for your character. How, you know, help me flesh out this character. Help me flesh out this situation. What about this chapter? Does it, you know, I'm not so sure about it. Having, you know, a group in which there is integrity, they're, you know, signing off on, I'm not going to steal anyone's work. I'm really going to be here to help each other. When you're ready for beta readers, people are reading it and giving back good criticism. I love how Anne Lamont says you can point with the sword of truth or you can chop their head off. And, you know, let's point, not chop.
Right. You know, that's brilliant.
That's going to be kind of our motto. And then bringing in other people who have done it. And so I've already set up a couple different people that we're just going to talk and chat. I have a podcast in which I talk to creatives about their journey and creativity and their business and that. And so that's kind of the idea, just more focused on writing and motivation and mindset and going forward and this weird time we're in, you know, and how do you keep writing when you feel like stressed out with the world, you know? And so I have all these people set up to sort of come into the mastermind and talk about it. And then I have a lot of experts because I'm no longer afraid to ask questions. And sometimes I annoy people with my questions on LinkedIn, but I've been able to really connect with people in 2020 and bring them in, people who know about formatting and fonts. And weirdly enough, you need to know about that. You know, your fonts need to go together. Otherwise, your book cover is going to look like it's self-published, and you don't want it to look self-published. You want it to look professional, like, you know, Penguin Press did it, or Harper Collins, or whatever, you know. And these people know how to do it. And how do you find an editor? Well, I'm going to bring in lots of editors, my editor, other editors. What's the difference between a line editor and a story editor, you know, and figuring out what you need and what is your budget need, you know, and how do you do your PR, and is it worth working with someone? I know people who do ads. So like all these things where, yes, you could either be on Google 14 hours a day like I was, or you could come and be part of a group and learn and give your advice and your expertise as well. And then help each other out. When book launch day comes, you buy the book and you tell other people about the book and you share it on your social media. Like, hey, my friend, you know, publish a book and here's what it is. And if you like fantasy, here it is, you know, or sci-fi or whatever it is. And you review each other's books truthfully. And if you hate it, don't review it.
There you go.
Don't chop their head off. You know, be truthful, but I'm not advocating for anyone not to tell the truth. I personally do not review books that I hate. I don't think it's fair. But that's just me personally. So yeah. That's the idea of the mastermind.
Oh, it's a great idea. And is it going, or you said February, so this is the beginning of February. Is it going to happen, or
yes.
when do you think it will be going? And also, how would someone who's like, I want to join the mastermind, go about joining it.
So on my website, catcaldwell.com, it's creative writing community. You can click on it and you can get on the list of people interested. And when the launch comes, probably at the end of February, you can sign up. And, you know, being on the list will help you get, you know, locked in to the low price and all the goodies that I'm going to put in there. So definitely get on the list if you're interested and get more information and see if it's right for you. And see if it's something that you would like to participate in. I know some people are probably like, oh, there's a price, but personally, I don't participate in things that don't cost me something. And I want this to be a place that people participate because I want people to give advice and get advice. And I think that we all are a little more willing to participate and give a little bit of our time if it costs us something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my explanation for that. I have been told it should be free and I did mull it over for a while and it's not going to be expensive. I still have to sort of think. But if you just want free, I have a ton of resources that I give already on Kat Caldwell Author on Facebook and through my newsletter. You know, all of us do a lot for free. I know, just like you do with your calendar. And then there are some points in which you have to be like, well, I gotta eat.
Right. That is the lights, you know, they need to stay on.
They need to stay on.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And, you know, it's funny because what you just said is so important. There's a lot of push to give it all away for free. And I get it. You know, mm-hmm. I get that idea. And yet there has to be a delineation. And your point is well taken. The dedication happens just a little bit more when you've got some dollars in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how it is, I think. And it would be really cool if none of us had to worry about money and we were all independently wealthy and everybody had everything they needed and then some all the time. Until that day comes, you know, it's important to also support the people who are out there trailblazing, and you're a trailblazer. So I think that's really an important point to remember, that people support those who are helping them, and that's great.
Right. And I don't believe in charging thousands of dollars because I can't afford that either. So nobody be scared. I mean, it is going to be at a lower point because I really do want to reach people who I've been there. Like, I don't want to, you know, I'm scared to put money into something I'm not sure is going to work. I've been there. I get there even now sometimes of like, oh, is this, you know, that's just a mindset thing. And I want you to come. I want you to realize that you do. It is worth doing. So don't not get on the list for information because you think it's going to be like $5,000. It's not even going to be $1,000. It's not even going to be, you know, it's probably going to be $29 a month. And there might be layers to it. That's why I'm hesitant to say I'm working out whether to do layers or not. So, you know, I know sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm scared to even get on the list because it's going to be like $900.
Right.
Like, all right.
Well, and it's, you know, there is this idea of that I think is worth exploring, of investing in yourself. And I'm right there. You know, I picked up my entire life and left DC, where I had a pretty inexpensive life, and moved to New York City, which life is not so inexpensive. And it was an investment I had to make for my own life, for my work, for my life, for my creative drive, all of that. It had to happen after, you know, I waited 30 years to do it and then finally did it. And I'm coming back to visit in Maryland and DC, but I'm not coming back to live. People mm-hmm. asked me that during the pandemic. They said, did you go back home? And I'm like, this is home. I'm in New York. I'm at home, but because this is where I was meant to be. But there's something that you said that I would like to touch on before I let you go get on with your day. You said you talk with creatives on your podcast, Pencils and Lipstick. You talk with creatives about how they tell their story and giving them a space to tell their story. Mm-hmm. when you do that, what story are you trying to get them to tell? Like, what story are you encouraging a guest to tell? I know because I was on it, but I'd love it if you describe what that process is for you and how you get it out of someone who's a guest on your show.
The story that I'm looking for is their, how they got the courage to do what they do. I think a lot about what we've talked about today, because I think a lot of creatives are not always encouraged to do what they're doing, whether you're a musician or an artist. Some of them are, some of them have great, you know, encouragement in their life. And some people honestly have just fallen into it and been like, I really like this. Like, oh my gosh. And I love those stories as well, but I'm really trying to get their story, their journey into realizing how they realize this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what makes me happy. This is, and I say happy in a sense of, remember, I am a very practical, rather cynical creative mind. And so happiness for me, like, I am not the bubbly jumping all up and down person, but the contentment, you know, life is good right now. Like, I like what I'm doing. When I worked in retail, I hated it. And I love it that some people love it because I need them there.
Right. You know? Absolutely.
Everyone is created to do something different, and trying to get that story out of them. I love hearing it. And I think that other people in the world need to hear it as well, because I think we all have a nagging of something we wish we had time to do, or we wish we could figure out how to do it. And I think we need the encouragement of like, well, gee, if they can do it, I should do it. I could try to do it. I might as well try. That's what I want people to decide.
And
I might as well try.
Yeah. And sometimes even if just one person says it, even if just one person has a story that's similar to yours, or just says what you say, you know, you can try this. It can change someone's life who's there to hear it, you know? So, so subscribe to the Pencils and Lipstick podcast also, in addition to going and getting on the list for the Mastermind Creative Writing Community. I'm excited to get on the list. That's going to be really fun. So I do, as I said, I keep saying this, I want you to come back on the show so we could talk. I have like 52 questions that we didn't even get to. So I hope that you'll come back to the show and talk about this stuff again, because it's worth discussing and it's worth plumbing the depths of that, especially for someone like you who is living, you're living the life you want to be living, which is, and doing the work you want to be doing, which is great. I do want to ask right now if it'll be okay for me to, in addition to publishing your beautiful headshot on the show notes, can I put the book covers, since we talked about them, can I put them on the show notes page?
Yeah, you can put the first two. The third one, if anyone wants to help me with it, I haven't yet figured out, because the title is Coffee Stains. And I can't quite figure out one that won't look weird. I don't want it to look like a laundry detergent commercial.
No, but you know the thing that immediately I go to is like a picture of where a coffee cup has been, if a little bit of coffee has spilled, you know, so that you've got that circle that on a white cloth or something, that circle.
Yes.
Or that's where I'm going, and it that could be something interesting depending on what the rest of the book is like three of them, you know, intersected, so that there's some kind of a cool design among them. Yeah, see there. Cool. There you go.
Whoever is a graphic designer, contact me at catcaldwell.author on Instagram. or get my email.
That's right.
On my website.
There are designs to be had. I am sure that there's somebody who's going to contact. That would be really cool. And I am going to put all of the social media links on the show notes page as well. The Cat Caldwell Author on Facebook, catcaldwell.author on Instagram, and Cat Caldwell on LinkedIn. And also, now, you have two different things I've heard. The website that I have here in my notes is catcaldwell.com, but it sounds like you also have catcaldwellauthor.com, or am I...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's just for Facebook and
okay, okay. Because I thought you said CalCaldwellAuthor.com, and I was going, wait, that's not what I have in my notes. So I wanted to, I wanted to make sure. And I'll put all of that in the notes so that you who are listening, you who are a brand new Cat Caldwell fan, you need to go and sign up for all of these things and follow her. I want to thank you, Cat, for this amazing time. What a great conversation. You know how fascinating and fabulous I think you are, so that goes without saying, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be here and talk about all of this.
Thank you for having me. I love talking with you.
Me too. I know. We need to like do a podcast together or something at some point.
We should.
That would be really fun. I have one last question, and this is a question that I ask everybody who comes on the show, and it's a silly question, but I find that it yields some poignant answers. And the question is this: if you had a plane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Oh, wow. I would write, "Your story is worth telling."
I love it.
That's what I would write. I really believe it. I mean, it took me a long time to believe that about myself. And I really, really believe it. No matter what's happened to you, no matter what you've gone through, whether your failures or failures of other people, your story is worth telling. Because you know what? That's what our ancestors used to teach each other. Mm. And I think that your story will impact somebody and it will help somebody.
Absolutely. It will help you for the telling, and it will help the people who hear it for the hearing of it.
Yep.
So true.
Absolutely.
Kat, thank you again so much for being on the show. You need to find Kat Caldwell. You just do, obviously, and get her books. And the links for getting the books and everything else will also be on the show notes page. So you will have ample opportunity to find her, follow her, get to know her and her work. She's fantastic, as you can tell from this episode. This is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I hope that you are enjoying the show. If you are, do me a favor. Let me know. Write a review. Comment. Get in touch with me at Isolde T on Instagram. That's where I spend a lot of my time. I would love to hear from you. I'd love it if you'd review the show and let me know. I also do have the Mindful Creative calendar that's out there, out and about, isoldet.com/mindfulcreative, so that you can get on with your both mindfulness practice and in tandem your creative practice, so that by the end of the year you have both well established. Until next time. And that will be Friday when I'm back with a single creativity episode. This is Isolde Trachtenberg again, reminding you to listen, learn, laugh, and love a whole lot. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2020. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg, and I send you all of my love.